Beckley and Marotta Mornings, Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
To me, it didn't seem like an outcome at all either. And at that time when I said it, the Cardinals were having trade talks. They had trade talks all the way through to the draft, really all up until, I would say, Wednesday night. And, you know, there were definitely times before the draft when I thought he was going to get traded.
Ian Rappaport, NFL Network, on the Pat McAfee Show, on not seeing DeAndre Hopkins getting cut. And I think most people who would have, surmised the situation with DeAndre Hopkins and his very murky future with the Cardinals, we all would agree that that was probably the worst-case scenario for the Arizona Cardinals. Mm-hmm. And worst-case scenario is here, because Friday morning after we got off the airwaves, the Cardinals made the announcement they are releasing DeAndre Hopkins. Now, again, it's not been officially filed with the league. If you go to azcardinals.com and you look at the roster, he's already gone. It's their lead story that he's been released, so it's just a matter of time. But I know Mike Florio wrote about it on Pro Football Talk that that leaves a glimmer of hope that maybe a trade could be worked out. I don't see that as remotely possible.
Everybody bring up the Rodney Hudson example.
Well there is there are examples of it. I mean, that's the last ditch effort that's putting all your cards on the table for the rest of the NFL to see. And you know now that if you're a team that DeAndre Hopkins is not targeting and you want him badly, this is your last chance to get him. But I, like you, I don't see a path to that.
Because there's a limited number of, I mean, you could be one of those teams and absorb $19.5 million of salary, even though it's unguaranteed for DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah.
But those teams are not the competing teams that DeAndre Hopkins wants to go to.
No, that's right. And so, I'm sure you saw this as well. He posted a video on his Instagram. He was in a weight room in Toronto, and the Patriots Super Bowl comeback against the Falcons was on. So he taped it and he put it on Instagram, then took it down. So here we go again with this. So I good luck in New England taking Wednesdays off, D-Hop, because that's not happening.
No days off.
And if he chooses that, what does that tell you about how he played the Cardinals? If he chooses to join a team that makes him practice, and he does that voluntarily, what does that tell you about the respect or the lack thereof he showed the Cardinals?
Not to mention all the public lusting over the top quarterbacks in the league.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Mac Jones is not one of those dudes.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. So what are you doing? So are you just, again, I'm soured by almost everything in this story and about this player, and I'm sorry, but that's sorry, not sorry. I really want to know if Monty Austin-Ford, somewhere along this path, is somebody who did compliment him for holding firm, for recognizing value, I think I put it. I'd like to know if anything came across his desk that he said, nope, not enough. And because if that happened, that's a fail.
Yes.
That's what I'm curious about in general, is like, if the Cardinals could go back, would they have played their hand differently from the beginning with this whole situation? Sort of made him, I don't know, I mean, how available did they make him? Did they try really hard to trade him? Or did they actually think there was a path forward that he would play on the team next year?
Yeah, I think that for a lot of different reasons, they just thought wiping their hands free of this and saving the cash money that comes with not having to pay him was worth more to them than holding it out on hopes of catching a team that really needs him as the trade deadline approaches. So I think that's the choice they made. Instead of focusing on the asset they get back for DeAndre Hopkins, they focused on the money they're saving and the integrity of this new regime. So if you really wanted to get egoless football players who love the sport of football, then you kind of got to wipe the slate
clean.
The
old addition by subtraction gag.
Yeah. More from Ian Rappaport on Pat McAfee Show about that particular thing. Cardinals opt to take the dead cap hit, $22.6 million, as opposed to keeping DeAndre Hopkins.
They could have, but they save a bunch of cash as well. So there's the cap, and then there's the cash. They were going to be hit with the dead cap money anyway. Like, that was counting on their cap. They could not post June 1 the cap. Basically, they couldn't split it up over 2 years because they already have two players who are post June 1 designations. They're taking it all this year, but they're saving cash. And, you know, for what you think is going to be a difficult year for the Cardinals, paying a receiver who is a, you know, has been a number one receiver, I personally think could still be. But we'll see what teams, if teams pay him like that. You know, doing all that for a team that's going to maybe struggle might not make sense for the Cardinals when they seem to be looking a little more toward the future.
Yeah, so that boils it down to, if anybody had questions about pre-June 1st, post-June 1st, that kind of clears that up too.
Yeah.
And now you look at the future. You know, there's all these teams that DeAndre Hopkins has linked himself to over the last couple months, whether it is
Buffalo or Kansas City
or Baltimore. The one, you know, in reading up on this and the situations, the one that makes the most sense to me right now, and it would take some maneuvering by the Kansas City Chiefs, and, you know, the article that I read talks about, hey, if you gave Chris Jones a hefty contract extension and restructured things and shuffled things around, the Kansas City Chiefs might be the team that can bring in DeAndre Hopkins, which I think would, you know, I think it'd be fascinating because the Kansas City Chiefs are the defending Super Bowl champions, and they did so really without a number one receiver target. And that's, you know, obviously they have Travis Kelce, and they use him in big ways in that offense. But they didn't. They lost their go-to receiver in Tyreek Hill and still won the Super Bowl. I wonder if the Chiefs are looking at this like, do we need this guy?
Well,
They did lose Juju Smith-Schuster.
Yeah, and according to Albert Breer, the Chiefs were making action. The Chiefs and the Cardinals, according to Albert Breer, were circling in on a deal some time ago, and the Odell Beckham Jr. contract that he got from the Ravens, $15 million for 1 year, apparently, according to Albert Breer, blew up any progress the Chiefs and the Cardinals were making.
Yes.
So it got down to money and perceived value in the fact that D-Hop wasn't really willing to move that much.
It all comes down to the same thing in football, doesn't it? Odell Beckham Jr. ruins everything.
Yeah. Say that again. It's true. I'm going to agree with you.
Goes to the Rams. They win a stinking Super Bowl.
So I guess the only good thing to come out of this is, as D-Hop has pulled this disappearing act, it seems like Buda Baker is moving back towards the Cardinals.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a positive. So for Buda Baker to come out and say, yeah, of course I'll be there when it's mandatory. Now, that doesn't mean he's backed off his trade request. It doesn't mean he's going to practice. But it sounds to me like he's softening.
I mean, you use the phrase like, you know, I'm letting my people handle all that kind of stuff. Which,
the of course I'm going to show up. The of course part of it. Like, come on. The you know me. I'm not a diva. That's what I read from that. We'll see.
Yeah, and we had identified those two situations as very different from top to bottom. Mm-hmm. I mean, at the heart of it, you had disgruntled players for different reasons, I think. But yeah, you know, other than that similarity, two very different situations. And, you know, and we even talked about it in previous weeks. You know, if one of those two is going to be on the Arizona Cardinals in 2023, who's it going to be? Nobody was going to pick DeAndre Hopkins.
Is funny because Hopkins was the one that said, I never asked to be traded. I want to be here. Buda was the one that made a formal trade request.
Right, that's right. That's exactly right.
Who said, I didn't want to be here? Ooh. DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah. Not a fan.
This Thursday, you can take a half day with the D-backs in Arizona Sports. Get lower level tickets for just $9.87 to watch the D-backs take on the Rockies with your favorite Arizona Sports hosts. Just text HALF to 620-620, and we'll send you a link to purchase tickets once again. That's HALF to 620-620. A series that had a little bit of everything is over, and the Miami Heat, an 8 seed, are going to the NBA Finals. We'll get into the Boston-Miami Eastern Conference Finals matchup next. It's Bickley and Marotta mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
The local sports leader. Floorbirds with Bickley and Marotta.
Miami's got the ball with 10 seconds left. The clock is winding down. The Miami Heat's improbable postseason run continues. After blowing a 3-0 series lead, the Heat stop the Celtics in Boston and make history themselves. They become just the second 8 seed ever to make the NBA Finals.
Dave Pasch, ESPN Radio on the final call, Miami, in a very anticlimactic Game 7, which, by the way, was not at all what I expected.
No.
After what transpired in Miami on Saturday night with the Celtics pulling one of the most improbable victories you'll
ever
see.
One of the craziest games.
It was, that game was bananas.
Yeah.
And they win it on a last-second tip-in by Derek White. And you're going home to Boston for a Game 7, and the place was electric. Mm-hmm. If you watch the pregame coverage, everybody commenting, we can't hear ourselves think. It is nuts in here.
Yeah.
The ball gets tipped, and after building a five-point early lead, the Celtics just laid down. It was just a puzzling.
Well, the injury to Jason Tatum obviously affected it, but yes, it was puzzling. And what a flex for the Miami Heat when you consider how this thing could have gone. I agree with you. Game 6 was bananas, and even though I'm not a Celtics fan, I walked away from Game 6 going, that would have been real cheese ball for that game to end on those three free throws from Jimmy Butler. On that call,
and for that series
play,
to end on those,
and for that series to end on that,
it was a bad foul though by Horford.
No, I agree with that. I agree with that. But at the same time, you don't want to see something like that, you know, come down to something like that.
And then for Marcus Smart nearly to make that three, it went in and out.
Yeah, the thing was three quarters of the way down, and then
I don't know about you, but and I'm sure a lot of Suns fans that have been on board for a while, we're having flashbacks to Game 5 of the Western Conference Finals in 2010.
No doubt about
it. Kobe Bryant airballs. Jason Richardson can't block out Ron Artest. He gets the tip in at the buzzer. They win Game 5. They win Game 6. They go on to win the title.
I have said for years, very few things describe this market more than the fact that this market was burned by a Kobe Bryant airball.
Yeah.
Generally, this market would love nothing more than a Kobe Bryant airball.
Big moment, and Kobe choked on it.
And Kobe choked on it.
And they won the game.
And they won the game anyways. This is a stat I was kind of aware of, but I didn't know it was this profound. Entering the 2016 NBA Finals, home teams in the playoffs, in the NBA playoffs, were 101-24 in Game 7s. So they won 101 of 125 Game 7s.
All right.
Since then, they're 8-11.
Wow. The Celtics couldn't win at home.
Yeah.
They lost 6 home games in this postseason alone.
And you're right. And the vibe in that arena was insane. It was insane earlier. So
how about just the vibe of the series?
Mm-hmm.
To lose, to be up 3-0 as the huge underdog, to lose 3 games in a row, including the way you lost Game 6, I think most everyone thought Miami was dead in the water going into Game 7.
No doubt.
I cannot believe that, they said all the right things after Game 6. We're going to win. You know, we still believe in stuff. I thought that was so demoralizing, everything that happened in the series the last 3 games, that they were dead. I couldn't believe the way that game turned out.
Yeah, and Miami even, they lose Game 5. Oh, we're gonna win the next one. We guarantee it. We're going to win Game 6. Oh, we're going to win it. We guarantee it. They are guaranteeing Game 7 again, and you're like, wait, you're running out of guarantees here.
No, and I thought the way Jimmy Butler had performed in Games 5 and 6, it was all kind of slipping away from him a little bit. And then he had that real good close in Game 6, made those 3 free throws, made that guarantee, and sure enough, it's come through. I was really impressed by the spirit of the Miami Heat yesterday in that environment. The looseness in which, the confidence and the looseness in which Caleb Martin, Duncan Robinson off the bench, just their attitude. They actually embrace that. And not a lot of, they'll all say that. Every team will say that. Devin Booker said it.
Another way to localize this is if you just watch this series, especially, and watch Miami's role players step up and not flinch at all in the biggest moments was the exact polar opposite of what the Suns got from
their
role players.
That's a great call. And then you look at this, and so you know, the Heat last year lost Game 7 to the Boston Celtics. Jimmy Butler vowed that we would be back here next year and we will win. That is what I'm talking about. When I talk about how Michael Jordan used to reassure fan bases and how Devin Booker should be doing the same right now, that's what I'm talking about. That's the kind of stuff that goes an incredibly long way with the fan base. And he delivered. And he was the leader of that thing. Bam Adebayo was terrific. It was a very, very stout performance from a team that I thought everybody was bracing to write, uh-oh, Miami Heat and their culture just choked up the first 3-0 lead in NBA history.
Yeah, now it's 0-151 for teams that have fallen behind three games. And and look, I know you made the prediction after the first Boston win. Hey, they're going to come back and win this. And there was a lot more people that got on your bandwagon as the series went on, especially after Game 6.
Yeah.
And that was the anticipation of last night, to see history that we had never seen. But that game was never really seriously in doubt.
No.
And let me
yeah, you're right.
Let me give Dan credit. He said Boston was going to come back and win when they were down 3-0. Like we said,
was it when,
because Denver, because both series were 3-0 at that time.
Yes.
Denver was still, and he said the Lakers are done, but he said don't give up on the Celtics. I would not be surprised if they came back and won this. And
now
you were
in
almost
hindsight, well, again, tip of the cap to you.
Well, I don't because, mean that. It was just intuition. I'm not trying to say I'm smarter than anybody. It was just, I just had a feeling that this is the better basketball team, and I just wasn't convinced Miami could close them out, and they proved me wrong yesterday. I'll tell you that.
In
much.
Hindsight, though, if you're the Celtics, would you rather have gotten swept?
Okay, this
you
is
probably might have a new everybody, you might have a new head coach right now if that would have happened.
Mazzulla is very happy they didn't get swept. He's going to be hey, we won five games on the brink of elimination. You can't fire me.
I mean, the Celtics did
point,
last
though.
Night.
No,
but what they did last night was again Phoenix Suns to the nth degree.
You're bringing up a point that most people are not going to think about, and I think it's fascinating. Would you, as a sports fan, rather be shot and killed and put out of your misery down 3-0 than do this wild climb back, a legacy win on the road in Game 6, and then just lay down and die? What's worse? I would suggest that the people who went to Game 7 yesterday would have preferred that sweep.
Yes. That's the way I was thinking about it.
And it wasn't just Jason Tatum's injury. That team, have you ever seen a team? We have. That's Phoenix Suns. What a dumb guy. I was about to say, have you ever seen a team in a Game 7 shoot more poorly than the Celtics did?
It wasn't just Game 7. Even in the game that they won, over the last, they had their worst 2 3-point shooting games in Game 6 and 7. They shot 20.8% combined from 3-point range over those last two games. And that's another thing to consider moving forward is, you know, it's a 3-point shooting league now. It is undeniable. But even for the good 3-point shooting teams, sometimes you're not going to have it. And sometimes you're going to step on that gas pedal from 3-point range and nothing's going to happen and you're cooked.
Yeah.
Because they never really... Yeah. They never really went away from it. They just kept shooting and shooting, especially after that really cold stretch in the first half, which led Charles Barkley from TNT to say this.
I got
to
say something, man. Why can you dumbass Celtics play making my head hurt? Ernie, let me tell you something.
Glad I asked you about Jimmy Butler.
I know, but I can't let it go, man.
I know.
You guys, if you just come to the game and say, we're just going to jack up threes, and if we win, we're going to win. If we miss it, we're going to lose. They're 4-for-21. They probably, I forget what they were in last game.
7-for-35.
It's so bad to watch them play. There's no ball movement. There's no body movement. And it's just frustrating watching a team with this much talent just play stupid.
It was, look, Jason Tatum gutted it out, played more than 40 minutes on a gimpy ankle. He said he was a shell of himself. You could see him wincing and grimacing. But that's an opportunity for everybody else to step up. And I like Jaylen Brown a lot, but for the second consecutive postseason, especially last night, he is a disaster handling the basketball. I mean, I've never seen anything like it.
I was
watching him earlier in the year thinking, wow, he really made strides in that area. But when push came to shove, 8 turnovers in a game
pretty
7?
Pretty bad. Yeah, and all those missed shots. There was definitely post-traumatic stress syndrome and flashbacks happening watching that game.
And here's a quick just NBA Finals stat now that the finals are set. The Nuggets' opponents so far in this playoffs, an 8th seed, a 4th seed, a 7th seed, and an 8th seed.
Yeah, the Suns were the highest seed.
The Suns were the highest seed is 4.
It's not their fault.
But from a seeding perspective, there's probably never been an easier path to an NBA title than
not even close. They were combined 27, and the previous record was a combined 22 if you added up all the seeds.
And the Miami Heat, okay, the Suns are 55 years of age, and they've been to two NBA finals, never won one.
Three
NBA finals, never won one. The Heat were founded 35 years ago. They've reached seven NBA finals, 20% of all seasons in their existence. And the numbers with Pat Riley are even crazier. And we've discussed this previously.
Yes, he's been a part of 25% of all NBA finals in history.
That's nuts. 19th NBA finals appearance as a player, coach, or executive.
Ugh.
19!
Wow. So that series gets underway Thursday in Denver. Nuggets and Heat. The ratings bonanza, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Coming up next, Sarah Gazelle will get us caught up on the big stories of the day in the Rush Hour reboot. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings, Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Arizona Sports, the local sports leader. Bickley and Murata Mornings. Rush Hour reboot. Rush Hour reboot. Getting you up to speed on everything happening in sports this morning. Brought to you by Brooklyn Betting. Arizona built for America's dreams.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome into the Rush Hour reboot here on Bickley and Murata Mornings on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader. Hope you all had a restful Memorial Day weekend and some time to remember why we have Memorial Day as well. I'm Sarah Cazell, taking you through the top stories of the day with Dan Bickley.
Hello.
With Vince Murata.
Interesting.
And with Jared Carlin.
Interesting.
That is unbelievable.
Was that a first?
I couldn't find anything,
that's the second
time. I went right to the drop.
Wow. That's really funny.
That is funny.
Sorry, Jared. I stepped on your toes.
Interesting. All right, let's start out with the latest on the Suns' search for Monty Williams' replacement. It is not going to be Nick Nurse, guys, as the 76ers reportedly hired him yesterday. ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski reported that he had his choice between the Sixers and the Suns, and he ultimately went with Philly for Joel Embiid, the reigning MVP, and to work with his old bud, Daryl Morey, again.
Both the Phoenix Suns and Sixers were engaged with Nurse's agent, Andy Miller, of Clutch Sports today. But ultimately, Nick Nurse goes to Philadelphia, number one, the chance to coach the MVP, Joel Embiid. And Sixers president, GM, Daryl Morey, he worked with Nick Nurse in Houston. They have familiarity history.
All right, Gambo tweeted yesterday, don't believe the report. Nick Nurse was never offered the head coach position of the Phoenix Suns. That is 100% inaccurate. He very likely used the Suns for leverage with Philly. Regardless, Nick Nurse not coming to the Suns. Are you guys disappointed at all that they were not able to land him, or did you not expect that that would ever be the case?
I don't think disappointed is the word, because I wasn't, it, to me it was not a no-brainer that the Suns should rank higher than the Bucks and the 76ers. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what the word is to use to describe how I feel about it, but I'm not that shocked.
A little. I mean, obviously, you know, last week on the show, I had identified Nick Nurse as my top candidate, the guy that I wanted the most. Yeah. So, yeah, there's a little bit of disappointment, and he goes to a different job. But I don't think it's a crushing blow for the Suns by any stretch.
Yeah.
There's other candidates now.
Oh, like three other candidates coming down from our Gambo this morning about 20, 25 minutes ago. He tweeted, and we have a story on ArizonaSports.com, that the three names for the Suns have been narrowed down to Kevin Young, Doc Rivers, and Frank Vogel. Kevin Young, Doc Rivers, and Frank Vogel. Could you guys be good with all three of those names, or is there someone on that list where you're like, goodness no, please no?
No, I'm good with all three. So that just means that obviously Nick Nurse, scratch him off the list, and Jordy Fernandez has been eliminated as well.
Well, yeah. I think of those three, I would prefer Doc Rivers, followed by Kevin Young, followed by Frank Vogel. Okay. My base of knowledge about Frank Vogel is not as complete as it should be, or will be. But that's the kind of way I handicap it now. I also think it's interesting though that if Kevin Young were really the slam dunk hire, why hasn't it been done yet? Mm-hmm. Which means, as Vinny said earlier, I think the experience thing is something that's important to Matt Ishbia. That's what I think.
certainly is fair to come to that conclusion.
Mm-hmm. All right. Is any part of you at all starting to think, looking at that list again, Kevin Young, Doc Rivers, Frank Vogel, is any part of you starting to think, should the Suns have fired Monty Williams?
No, absolutely not.
What about you, Vince?
I'm not there. But starting with Nick Nurse, and they flashed this up on ESPN. So they win the title in 2019 mm-hmm. in Toronto.
His first year as an NBA head coach.
The next year, they make it to the second round of the playoffs. In the last 3 years, the Toronto Raptors have 2 playoff wins.
Yeah.
Monty Williams and the Suns had 27 playoff wins in the last 3 years.
Yeah, but that's but again, the Monty Williams has changed, and so is the narrative.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And the playoff failures are very, very real. And repeated. So I have zero issue with the firing of Monty Williams. I'm not one that needed, because I think I heard Luke say this. Show me who you want, and then I'll tell you whether I think Monty Williams should be fired. I am not in that camp at all.
It just needed to be done.
Yes.
Change needed to happen.
Yes. Yeah. The voice needed to be changed. The interpersonal dealings on the team were not good, clearly. The culture, once a huge part of their success, had eroded to practically nothing. Yeah, there's no.
But it just goes to show you,
there's no looking back for me.
Even successful NBA head coaches have about a 4 or 5 year window.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Unless you're an extreme example like Eric Spoelstra or Greg Popovich, everybody's going to be gone
exactly.
in 4 or 5 years.
He's right about that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's get to the Arizona Cardinals. DeAndre Hopkins is gone. The Cardinals released him on Friday. That happened immediately after our show. And then, of course, we had the holiday yesterday, so still need to take some more time to dive into that. ESPN's Jeremy Fowler said the day after the news broke that there were teams engaged in trade talks with the Cardinals for D-Hop, including Kansas City, but the $19 million owed to DeAndre Hopkins was a hang-up.
You know, I think he would have taken a lesser deal, but he would have had easy to reach incentives to get him back to the $19 million. So that's just something teams weren't really willing to do, and so it just became tough to trade him. So the Cardinals just say, let's save the money now. And, you know, certainly it'll be a market for him, but it is late May, so it's tricky to figure out how much money he can really get.
All right, DeAndre Hopkins is gone. Not a lot for the Cardinals to show during his 3 seasons with the team. How will you sum up the D-Hop era here in Arizona?
Now, that's, to me, very disappointing. I when he came here, Vinny and I, we basically were on the air when that news broke, uh-huh. and Vinny and I were both astounded uh-huh. at the fact that the Cardinals had secured one of the top 2, maybe 3 wide receivers in football. He had his highlight moments that made you go, wow, that guy's unbelievable. But on whole, in retrospect, the Cardinals gave DeAndre Hopkins way more than he gave them in return.
I would agree with that. Ultimately, it was disappointing. We talked about it last week, even before this news became official, but I asked the question, was it still worth it? Yeah, it was worth it. They didn't give up a ton.
Right.
They got a premier wide receiver to come to the team, but you know, 3 years, the Cardinals played in 1 playoff game, and he didn't play in it, and they got killed. Yeah. It was ultimately a disappointment.
And we'll be talking more about DeAndre Hopkins coming up at 8:30 with Kyle Vandenbosch, who is an analyst for the Cardinals. So
yes, here we go.
Cover that then. Standing.
All rebooted.
We are rebooted.
Yeah,
Rush Hour reboot every morning at 7:30. Coming up next, the candidate list for the Suns is at 3 now that Nick Nurse has taken the job in Philadelphia. We'll get into some possibilities for the Suns' new head coach. Straight ahead, Bickley and Marotta mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Dan Bickley, Vince Marotta. Bickley and Marotta mornings. Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Can I tell you who's going to get the Suns job?
Who do you hear?
From the producers of I Told You Bronny Was Going to USC 6 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be Kevin Young.
Oh, okay. So they're going to hire their assistant from their own staff.
That's Bill Simmons, Kevin O'Connor from the BS Pod on May 23rd, 1 week ago today, making the proclamation. Since then, we've had some developments in the NBA coaching cycle. The Milwaukee Bucks, they got out ahead of it. Over the weekend, they are hiring Toronto assistant Adrian Griffin to take over.
Mm.
I didn't know this. His son, AJ Griffin, plays for the Hawks. The kid from Duke? I had no idea that they were related. I learned that over the weekend. But
I did not know that.
The Bucks go down that road as a championship contender with a multi-time MVP on their roster. They hand the reins to a first-time NBA head coach. Then yesterday, the news breaks on Nick Nurse. Philadelphia hiring Nick Nurse, a championship-winning coach, to take over a team with the reigning MVP. So the Suns have a fork in the road. They could go one of two ways. They have two championship-winning coaches on their list of the final three candidates in Doc Rivers and Frank Vogel. And they have a guy who is a member of Monty Williams' coaching staff in Kevin Young, who would be a first-time NBA coach. I think this will be fascinating to see what direction the Suns actually take here.
Yeah.
Because there's benefits in all three of these guys.
And yes.
If Kevin Young, the first-time head coach, gets it, I don't see that as a defeat for the Suns in any way, shape, or form.
Well, does it feel, though, like if that was who they really wanted, he would have already gotten the job? That maybe Ishbia is hoping to get one of these bigger names first?
Is a feeling of that if you've got these three guys here and two of them are, would you call them recently fired retreads, Jared?
That's right.
What you called them?
That's exactly right.
That's exactly right. Then, yeah, I think that if you wanted to really instill confidence in Kevin Young, you name him head coach immediately after Nick Nurse turns you down. But then you make it clear to everybody Nick Nurse was your number one choice. I don't know. I think what Vinny said earlier, I think it's probably the hang up. There's probably this view that, okay, where are we going to be if we really promote a guy from Monty Williams' staff? And do we really want the same staff here? Because if you hire Kevin Young, you've got to give him autonomy to bring in his own guys, don't you? Otherwise, then you don't have a head coach. You've got a puppet.
Maybe not fair of me to assume, because that's the most recent experience that Kevin Young has, is working with these guys. You know, he does have assistant coaching experience with another NBA franchise in the Philadelphia 76ers. There's contacts around the league, guys that he's worked with, maybe young assistants that he's kept an eye on. So I think there still would be some level of autonomy. I think it would be a mixture, though. I think it would be a mixture of
some
autonomy of Kevin Young with some guys held over from Monty Williams.
Right. Stuff. And so that makes me a little queasy, only because that's when you get into the puppeteering business, that can take away from the long-term success of any franchise. And I'm not saying that's happening here, but I do think this is something that Matt Ishbia is thinking about. And I think the veteran experience, who's been there before, who knows how to get this thing done? Well, Frank Vogel won a championship in the bubble. Some people claim wonder about the legitimacy of it. The fact that they were in the bubble is not why I would question the legitimacy of it. I would question the huge amounts of time off before they fired it back up.
Mm-hmm.
That's why LeBron and the Lakers won that year.
Yeah, 4 months off in the middle of the season helps AD and LeBron a lot.
That's the way I see it.
They could have used a bubble this year.
They could have used 4 months off.
Yes.
Yeah. So, but nonetheless, Frank Vogel's got that, and so does Doc Rivers. Both men have won a championship, and I'm sure that's very appealing to Matt Ishbia.
Yeah, I mean, the caveat for Doc Rivers is that his championship happened quite a long time ago, and he's had multiple jobs since then.
True.
Yeah, I wonder if this is the year where Doc Rivers' luck runs out. I mean, if the Suns don't hire Doc Rivers, do you see him as a possibility in Detroit? I don't. Do you see him as a possibility in Toronto? Probably not.
No. So it'll be curious to see what Monty Williams thinks about this, because even though Monty Williams is much better suited for a team like Detroit, is that what he wants to do? Does he want to jump back into the market for that team? Young and promising, but not nearly there yet.
And we know that the Monty Williams to Milwaukee Bucks rumors obviously did not come to fruition.
And if memory serves, when Monty's time in New Orleans as the head coach expired, he took a year off, did he not?
Mm-hmm.
He even shifted into the front office operations in San Antonio.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see any coach wanting to decompress.
I don't think he was considered a hot candidate after he left New Orleans.
No.
No. And he's been very open about that since, that he was half the coach he wanted to be, that he was he was not in control of his emotions. And he gained that maturity with the course of time. And that's also a warning sign to Matt Ishbia, that even though Kevin Young looks like he checks all the boxes, you don't know. You don't know, because controlling your emotions, the emotional maturity that goes along with that, you got to have it. So
yeah, here was Brian Windhorst from ESPN yesterday with more reaction and more on how Nick Nurse ended up with the 76ers.
There's an history here. Nick Nurse and Joel Embiid have had words with each other at times. They've been high-level competitors against each other. They've played against each other in two playoff series, each of them winning one. Of course, the famous one, the Kawhi Leonard shot that bounced in at the buzzer in 2019. So they know each other very well, and you get a coach with a championship, DNA championship resume into Philadelphia, and he also has a long-standing relationship with Daryl Morey. They both worked for the Houston Rockets together, leading to this situation. It was one of the highest coveted jobs on the market, and Nick Nurse, one of the highest coveted coaches, and they came together.
Yeah, and I wonder, too, you know, the Joel Embiid factor, and Brian Windhorst talked about it there. They've had words in the past. There's been a little bit of a clash. That doesn't necessarily mean anything if it's in the heat of competition, but, you know, how much... You know, after the reports, and it was Daryl Morey himself who came out and said, look, Joel Embiid was shocked that we fired Doc Rivers.
It's like, oh.
that's the way you're going to treat your superstar? Did the 76ers make up for that in this process by leaning on Joel Embiid to say, hey, we really want Nick Nurse. Does that work for you? Because I think otherwise would be somewhat foolish.
Yeah.
And then you wonder, too, about, you know, we know of the quote that Devin Booker gave about Kevin Young. During the season, which I think you can glean something from. I don't think it's the end-all, be-all. That's a guy, you know, supporting an assistant coach whose work he appreciates. But, you know, it's also pretty well known. I don't know if it's still going on, but Devin Booker was in France at the Cannes Film Festival.
Yeah.
I wonder how much contact there's been with your star player in this process.
So do I. That's a great, great call. It's one of the things that I was thinking about over the weekend. How, because you would like to think Devin Booker was deeply involved.
Yes.
And yet he doesn't see, it seems like he couldn't have been more distant just by location.
Yeah.
Where he was.
And judging from the pictures that came out of the Cannes Film Festival, if I'm Devin Booker, I'm not answering my phone.
I'm sure he was having a very good time.
Will you answer the phone, it's Devin? No, I can't.
Oh. Wow.
Yeah, that was the right response. Wow. Grown. Yeah, was...
Okay.
Ooh.
Start rubbing your eyes, Jeff.
Yeah, start rubbing your... Go back to sleep, ferret!
Well, wonder. Gambo put it out there today that it's down to three. It's down to Vogel,
Doc,
Kevin Young, and Doc Rivers, that Jordy Fernandez is also no longer a candidate, and that this could be done by the end of the week, which seems like a really long timetable at this point, doesn't it? If you got it down to three?
Yeah. Yes, it does.
But as you said, there's still two other teams that haven't hired a coach.
Right. And the NBA Finals begin when?
Thursday.
Yes.
So maybe between now and Thursday would be good timing.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, okay. I think would probably want to. I don't know if you'd want to do it tomorrow. That's like the advanced press conferences and all that. Maybe I don't know. I don't know what's proper etiquette.
The Nurse
anymore.
Announcement came out the day of Game 7. So
yeah, they didn't care about that.
Yeah, they didn't care about that.
When you got your guy, you want to make the announcement, I guess. You could text your thoughts to the FanDuel text line at 620-620 right now. Coming up next, the second half of the show kicks off with...
Fire!
The Bickley Blast. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.